Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Today's unemployment claims paint a picture of an economy devastated by the coronavirus, but they don't give us the most important measure, according to economist Gene Sperling. He was the director of the National Economic Council under Presidents Obama and Clinton, and he says we ought to be focused on what he calls economic dignity. That's the title of his new book, and Gene Sperling joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you for having me.
Well, at first, just explain what you mean by economic dignity.
You know, I being in economic policy for 30 years, just became, I think, disillusioned with how much our focus in economics is on particular metrics, GDP, productivity. And I feel that it took our eye off the ball of what matters most in life. It makes invisible a lot of our economic pain. And so I wanted to define what I thought our North Star, our ultimate aspiration should be. And I realized that to have true economic dignity, you really need to satisfy three pillars. One, all of us have to have a capacity to not only care for our family and loved ones, to not just be able to put food at the table, but to be at the table, at the bedtime story, at the bedside of older loved ones in their final days. And that secondly, all of us need more than just those provisions. We have a desire to have real first and second chances to pursue our purpose and potential. And finally, the understanding that none of a dignity framework works unless you can ensure that people can contribute economically without domination and humiliation. And I think that this has never been more relevant than it is today. You know, this is really our moment of truth on economic dignity.
Well, how do you measure that? How do you measure somebody's economic dignity the way that you would measure GDP or how many jobs are created or, you know, wage growth?
I believe that economic metrics are important. But the reason why having this qualitative aspiration is so important is that I feel that without it, we allow too much economic pain, too many people to be invisible. So I'll give you an example. Right now, the way it normally is in economics is you have to show that a particular problem is actually lowering jobs, lowering wages, lowering labor force participation. So something like sexual harassment or paid family leave only get designated an economic issue if they show up in an economic metric. But from an economic dignity perspective, it makes you ask if tens of millions of people are going to work feeling dominated, humiliated, abused, harassed, that is an economic challenge in and of itself. When you see people being ordered back to reopen the economy without regard for their PPE, whether they have sick leave, whether they're safe, those people feel that they are being denied that sense of dignity. So an economic dignity framework may not give you precision, but as the saying goes, it may help you be more roughly right than precisely wrong.
Well, when you talk about people being ordered back to work, I assume you're talking about what President Trump has just done to order people who work in meatpacking plants to go back to work. But it does go beyond that right now. Those aren't the only workers who
Absolutely.
Are basically being forced to go to work right now because they're considered essential.
You know, in 1968, Martin Luther King had his famous speech at the Memphis sanitation worker strike. And he not only said that all labor has dignity, but he said that the sanitation worker was as essential as the physician. This is the moment where that has become very real. The farm worker, the delivery person, the grocer, the home health worker, the nurse's assistant. These are now people literally saving our lives. And I think the dissonance that we are rightly feeling is that you do not achieve dignity just with the applause, just with the respect. You have to have dignified treatment. So when 50% of nurse orderlies and home health aides don't have a single day of paid sick leave, when they're making between $11 and $14 an hour, when 87% of domestic workers say they need a mask and only 17% have that. We're starting to have to grapple with why is it that we do not ensure a level of economic dignity for all workers? Why do we look at jobs that are always the most important in our lives, the people taking care of our children, the caregivers taking care of parents who have heart conditions or dementia? Why is it that we do not offer people like that a dignified wage, health care, paid sick leave, more career mobility? And I think the question for this moment of truth is, will we respond with temporary measures or will it make us rethink whether we should ensure, even in a capitalist society, that there is a certain level of economic dignity that goes not just to putting food on the table, but your ability to be there for your loved ones, your ability to pursue your sense of purpose, and that everyone has the capacity to be in a union or has some capacity to organize, bond, and be able to ensure that they are not subject to domination and humiliation.
So let me ask you about a few of the things that come up in this book, Economic Dignity, that really are top of mind right now. First of all, you talk about how during the Obama administration, during the financial crisis, you were very much in favor of and helped to get people to be able to have mortgage forbearance so that they didn't have to pay their mortgage right away if they couldn't afford it. This is a big topic of conversation right now. Do you think that mortgages at this point should be and could be extended out, maybe even a year for some people or longer, so that they don't fall into foreclosure?
To lose your house, to have to move your family out, to risk homelessness, this is among the greatest assaults of dignity. So mortgage forbearance is almost the easiest thing that you can do. I mean, it's just saying that while we're going through this difficult time, you know, I believe you could tack it on. We should make it interest-free, give people a chance to get back on their feet. But we have to do the same for people who are renting.
But isn't that a lot harder to do with renters, though, because you're dealing with individual landlords and getting them to say, okay, fine, I'll let you take a break on your rent this month?
That's why I think you have to look for what are the bold solutions that solve a lot of these separate issues. And I think you see two being put out there. One is what we've seen is an unemployment that gives you 100% of your wages. That will give people their paycheck that allows them to pay their rent. Or there's a large proposal out by people as diverse as Congresswoman Jayapal to Bernie Sanders to Mark Warner that says if a company will take a worker they would have otherwise laid off and pay them their full salary and keep them on health care, will help foot that bill. Those are the big proposals because they solve several problems at once. They make sure you're made whole and that therefore you can make the rent, the car payment, the things that would allow you to sustain a basic level of economic dignity, you know, in an unprecedented economic crisis pandemic like we are living through right now.
Can gig workers have the kind of economic dignity that you're talking about if they don't have the kind of benefits that somebody with a full-time job has, and if they don't have the sort of sick leave and family leave and subsidized childcare that you've also been talking about?
Well, the answer is no. You know, the issue with gig workers right now is incredibly important. You know, in 2012, when UberX started, there were already 2 million in-home workers, childcare workers, of which 12% had healthcare, 7% had a pension plan. I think it was a good first step that we included gig workers in the unemployment insurance. And I think a big test for our country will be, will we now reconstruct our programs to make sure that regardless of who your employer is or which way you work, that there is a basic level of healthcare, unemployment insurance, paid sick leave that's available to every American. I mean, that is a must if you're going to have a universal guarantee of economic dignity.
Gene Sperling, it's one thing to write this book and even get people to say, yes, that's exactly what I want. But do you think that this country will be able to do the kinds of things you're talking about, especially if we are about to go into either a deep recession or a depression?
Well, this really is a test for us as a country. You know, does this moment where we literally are relying on many of the workers we have ignored and treated the worst, does it create a new revelation or inspiration to be better than we've been? And look, I've been in two White Houses. I know more than anybody that you are constrained by political reality and divided government. But I can't help but believe that this moment is not going to move the country in somewhat of the right direction, that we should be learning the lessons for our long-term economic compact and not just about the temporary measures to get us through this moment.
That is Gene Sperling, who was director of the National Economic Council under Presidents Obama and Clinton. His new book, which is out this week, is called Economic Dignity. Gene Sperling, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeremy. Really appreciate you having me.